Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. And as they often do in the office here at Bloor and Ted Rogers Way, they have like some free sports cards just sitting out. I don't know, it's just like a pile of cards. Today there were hockey cards and there were baseball cards. And I've tried to, I shouldn't say I tried to, because I don't want to influence my kids, but I've said, hey, are you interested in sports cards? And they said, yes. So I've grabbed some of the free cards before and presented it to them, and they've kept them in their room. I mean, they're scattered all over the place, but yeah, they have cards. So I thought I would select a couple today to give to them. Would you like to know the baseball cards that I've picked for my children to give to them?
Yes. First, I have to know, did you pick them at random or did you go through and pick with purpose?
Yeah, I went through and picked them with a purpose.
Also, sorry, while you sort through them there.
I only have four.
I just want to provide everyone with the context of the way Ben laid that out made it seem like there's a magical card fairy who comes
there
in
is,
and
though.
Leaves. And leaves a different group. It's the same big pile of cards that have been here. I've worked here for 16 months now. That pile has been sitting on that desk the entire time. There are also just like free books everywhere.
Yeah.
If any pro athlete who is Canadian has ever written a book, you could go and take one for your friend. Like from Matthew Barnaby to Kipper to Terry Ryan, like everyone's book.
I have a Marian Hossa book that was sitting in the backseat of my car for weeks and weeks. I finally took it out of my car yesterday.
The only one I haven't seen is Eric Lindros' Fire on Ice, the first like real book I read as a kid. So this isn't like Ben magically got four good cards today.
No.
He hasn't been looking deep enough, I guess, or hasn't picked these four yet.
So you're saying those weren't there? Those were there yesterday. They weren't just deposited there today?
They have been the same ones since I started here last October.
Are you sure?
I am fairly
certain.
Okay,
I'm taking all of them then. Because this is what I did last time. Somebody came down, dropped them off, and before anyone saw them, I was just like, oh, I'll start my kids off with a collection.
You should take
them. I took the whole box.
You should. My entire inheritance if it ever comes to that, is going to be just like the old hockey cards my dad has in a shed somewhere in Newfoundland.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's it. That's
cards
all.
Are back. Like, cards went down. There was like there was a real lull for sports collectible trading cards. And so now they're back, apparently.
My parents were very young when they had me, not like working, you know, in their careers and stuff yet. Like, I'm fairly certain that hockey cards is how I learned math and numbers.
Cool.
Like, it was just like, here's a bunch of hockey cards and stickers and stuff. Figure it out.
I've never been a collectibles guy. The only thing that I could say I ever came close to collecting was Pogs, but I never bought them. I just, like, borrowed some and then
just
won.
Hustled them. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Don't bring your Pogs around me.
Yeah. You get a slammer. I bought a slammer.
Well, you would have had to have a slammer. You got to play the game.
Yeah.
Try to knock over Pogs
dominant.
With a Pog? Come on.
No, I was dominant.
The other note here before you reveal the cards. If you want your kids to, like, take care of them or, like, not have them scattered everywhere, you get them a three-ring binder with the little plastic sheets. Like, then it's a whole...
It's pretty nerdy, though.
It is, but then it at least takes on a, like, the tidiness is a part of it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, like, a clean freak, right? Like, I wasn't, like, the messiest kid, but... I wasn't the tidiest kid. The cards always in pristine condition.
No, it's a good point. Yeah. No, the binder is, and it's easier to look at them too.
Yeah.
All right. So here's what I got. This one's a no brainer and not that this is worth anything, but this is, I mean, there's so much to like about this guy. Nolan Ryan.
Oh
it's
yeah. That's
Nolan
a good
Ryan card. And it's Nolan Ryan is 20th to reach 300 wins is what it says on the card. So I guess it's not just a player card. It's like a
milestone,
Milestone card. There's a Nolan Ryan doc on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not.
But yeah, it is wild. Nolan Ryan, one of the greatest pitchers of all time, and just, I mean, pitched till he was 1,000 years old until eventually, finally, his arm gave up in his late 40s, never won a Cy Young Award in his entire career. Insane. So yeah, that's an obvious one. Yeah, that is wild. This one, yeah, okay. Nate Pearson. Got to get some Blue Jays in there.
Hey, yeah.
Nate Pearson has a card that's, I guess, made to look kind of old. But, okay, we got some Nate Pearson. Two more. Joey Votto. I got a Joey Votto card.
Look at that stance.
I mean, shout out to Joey Votto, who lost his chess match yesterday. If you follow him on Instagram, he's been, cataloging his chess matches, and he won his first match in the city of Toronto a couple of days ago and lost yesterday. He was despondent at the subway station on the TTC.
I don't follow him on Instagram. I am aware of the chess thing. I didn't know he lost, but I have been teaching myself chess recently as well.
Yeah, I've tried at times to get into chess. I think I might be too dumb. Like, I just... thinking 5 and 6 moves ahead, it's just too much for me. My brain can't handle it. You seem like you'd be like a duck to water with chess.
I hope so.
All right. And then the last one is actually weird as I'm holding it in my hands. I don't know why I chose this one. Dustin Pedroia as a Portland Sea Dog. It seemed very weird. And I, you know, despite the fact that he played for the Red Sox in the division and he was so scrappy, like, I always respected Dustin Pedroia. So there, those are the four cards.
Yeah, I liked Pedroia as well. I liked that he would just constantly refer to himself as a laser show because he hit so many line drives.
Yeah.
I also like that the Red Sox have been chasing that for a long time, just continuing to acquire more middle infielders who can't hit for power.
Yep. All right.
And so, I know Pedroia had some good power seasons.
And the end of his career was so weird because this is a guy that was like on a Hall of Fame track and then just the injuries. I think it was knee stuff that, and it was like 3 straight years he tried to come back and just never did. And it was kind of his career just petered out. I know Red Sox fans know that there was an announcement made at some point, but it just felt like for a player of his caliber, former American League MVP, it would have been a bigger fanfare.
He won Rookie of the Year and MVP in consecutive years.
Yeah.
And then
5 foot nothing.
Yeah. And of course, also some postseason success mixed in there. A couple of rings.
Yep. All right. Let's get to today's top story. The Toronto Maple Leafs better than the New York Islanders this year, at least, as William Nylander explodes in the second period. The Leafs as a whole explode. Ilya Samsonov, you got to keep running with the goalie that's playing the best. And apparently, according to some of the proprietary information that the Leafs have when it comes to goaltenders, that was the best game he's played all season long.
That first period was like unbelievable, not just for him, but just like the Leafs should have been down 2 or 3 goals in that first period. They played terribly. They couldn't get the puck out of their own end enough that they shuffled the top six and the top two pairings. Whatever metric you're referring to in terms of quality of save or whatever.
Well, Curtis Sanford just said he looked at the tape and he's like, no, that's the best game he's played this season.
Yeah, I mean, 31 saves on 33 shots, and basically the entire first period they were pinned in their own end.
Dude, okay, so I was maybe going to start with Nylander, but now that we're here talking about Samsonov, there's a case to be made statistically that he's having the best season among National Hockey League goaltenders.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, I'm just telling you, for goalies with over 10 games played this season, he leads the NHL in goals saved above expected per 60 at 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
That's not nothing. Like, he is making more saves than you would expect an average goaltender to make at 5-on-5. And he's making more of those saves per game than anybody in the National Hockey League. That includes his little slump, his a tough run of play there a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, he's also, you know, struggled a little bit when the Leafs are shorthanded, which is fine. That's been a team-wide thing over the last 20 or so. The save percentage in penalty kill situations has gone down. He's sub 850 there, which is a career low, but you'd expect that to come back up a little bit as well, given how well he's playing elsewhere. The only reason I push back on it is just that, you know, this far into the season, I know it's a timeshare and everything, but a guy who's started 20 games, 48 games in the season, I just don't think you can put him quite in that discussion. On a night-to-night basis, he's been awesome. And what's the quality start rate? I know we use this for baseball more than we use it for hockey, but 65%. So, what, 13 of his 20 starts, he's had a pretty good outing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when Matt Murray gets back in there because Leafs have, what, 4 more games before the All-Star break. No back-to-backs over that span. I suppose you want to get Matt Murray back in there at some point, but if you're riding the hot hand, if you're operating this as a true meritocracy, why wouldn't Samsonov get every start until he falters?
And we talked to Gord yesterday, and he made the point that, you know, potentially, if you're looking at the whole 82 games and given what Matt Murray's health status has been in the past, if he was banged up at some point, you know, this gets him a little bit of an extended breather as well. I think you'd probably have been more forthright about that, put him on the IR and got Shalgren up just so it doesn't, you know, the optics of it wasn't the same. But I don't think it's the worst thing for Murray to get a little breather given his injury track record.
Either. Yeah. And I don't want to throw in some discord that doesn't exist, but it is interesting that this guy, well, one, wasn't handed the starting job right out of the gates. And I reference how Kipper took a little bit of issue with that preseason. He earned that job with his preseason play. Matt Murray did. He is under contract for next season, where Samsonov is not. He's a restricted free agent, so still under team control.
ARB eligible, which would be interesting to see if it gets that far.
Yeah, it sure will. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see the guy with the two Stanley Cup rings, who certainly thought that he was, if not the number one immediately upon arriving, capable of earning that job, and at times has looked the part, and then what, two bad starts in a row, and one that was like you could kind of quibble with because it was against the best team in hockey in the Boston Bruins, and then he has a stinker the next one, and then he doesn't get to play for what, 3 weeks? I wonder how the veteran feels about that.
Yeah, and he'd had, prior to that little skid against Boston and Florida, he'd had three really good outings in his last four.
Right.
Where he, you know, allowed five goals over those three games on, you know, something close to 90 shots. So he was in a pretty good groove there. I'm sure there's an element of, he's Matt Murray. At this point, he's lost some jobs and he's had poor seasons. Like, I'm sure this doesn't feel like anything new to him, given what the post-Pittsburgh years have been like for him. I'm sure it doesn't feel the best. I'd think at, you know, 28 years old, this far into his NHL career, there's a little bit of David Price to it for him, which is, well, if I don't like it, I should play better next time I'm in there.
Yeah.
And I know that that's not entirely fair because you can't control how well Samsonov plays and when your next turn comes. But yeah, the hope is, and this is where all the stuff we heard about when they acquired him, that, oh, well, his relationship with the goaltending coach and his relationship with the front office, and they know this guy really well as a dude, you hope that all of that legwork has, and those relationships have you in a spot where Matt Murray takes something like this the right way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what was the point of all that chatter and, you know, looking at all those nice, ethereal things?
Yeah, no, I hear you. The only thing is, do you necessarily want your backup making $5 million? No.
But like, that's done. That part's done. Do you want a successful goalie tandem that makes $6.5 million combined?
Yeah, that's it. That's the way you should look at it.
Yeah. I don't care otherwise.
And I shouldn't be looking too far ahead to this offseason if, in fact, Ilya Samsonov continues this to the end of the regular season, into the postseason, they win a Stanley Cup, then probably Matt Murray's not returning as a $5 million backup.
Also, guess what happens? Wednesday up against the Rangers, if Samsonov gets the nod again, he allows four goals on 24 shots, and then suddenly Friday, Matt Murray's got the chance, and then he plays well, and you're rolling it into the All-Star break, and you're coming out of it completely fresh 50-50 again. Like, it only takes one iffy Samsonov game to, not even a bad game, just a cool-off game to get Murray back in there, and then it only takes one good Murray game to get this right back to a 50-50 thing.
The only thing I would wrap up this conversation with is if the reverse were happening, if it was Matt Murray going on this run and Samsonov had a couple of bad games in a row, I don't think the Leafs would be playing Matt Murray the amount of times, the four consecutive games that the Leafs might be playing Ilya Samsonov because of the injury history.
And yesterday was the first time all season that when two goalies were healthy, either Samsonov and Murray had both played three games in a row, Shalgren had played four games in a row, but all of that was when everyone was hurt and the goalies were just kind of rotating in and out of the IR. The part of that with Murray, too, is it would depend what chunk of the schedule he gets hot during. Mm-hmm. This chunk of the schedule where they're playing nine games in 21 days, maybe they would be riding him.
Yeah, maybe.
Because you've got not only no back-to-backs, but a bunch of double-off days on the schedule as well.
Back-to-back coming right out of the All-Star break. So both these goalies are going to get in at some point in February, obviously.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay, not, guys. You can get in there February 11th and February 19th. You can circle those. One of you will get to play. Don't worry, guys.
So that'll be good. I want to talk about Goldie Progers, who in 1920 for the Toronto St. Pats, along with Mickey Roach, had a 5-point period, as did Daryl Sittler in 76 in the second period of his 10-point game. Those are the only Toronto Maple Leafs, and two of those guys played for the St. Pats, that have scored more points in a single period than William Nylander's 4 in the second period of yesterday's game. He leads this team in 5-on-5 points per 60, and he's tied with Austin Matthews in 5-on-5 goals per 60 minutes. He's not an all-star, and this guy seems unfazed by most things and was unfazed by that, and it was like John Tavares that kind of had to go to bat for him. And I would say that if he had one of those all-star appearances in his back pocket, if you could say, right, like it's, you know, the Hall of Famers who sign their signature, HOF. If you're an all-star, you get to say all-star NHL forward William Nylander. If he had one of those on his hockey reference page already, I would believe it. But man, it is, and not to get up in arms about an all-star game, because I don't really care, but this is maybe statistically the best player on this Leafs team this season, and he's not going
to
be there.
Yeah, this is the issue with the format of everyone having to be represented. And I mean, there, we'll talk to Frank Cervelli. He tweeted out some of the new skills challenge things that now that they're doing like location specific things, like you know how in Vegas they did the card thing. So they're doing that in, I guess it's Fort Lauderdale this year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. And it's so, I don't want to sound like a cranky old head or like back in my day. I don't know what the issue was with an all-star game where all the best players play. And like, I mean, maybe the introduction of the shootout kind of killed part of the skills competition, mm-hmm. but like hardest shot, accuracy shooting, fastest skater, and shootouts. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty good skills competition to me.
Yeah, I
don't know why you can't make that an entertaining event.
Well, and also the other thing, yeah, I'm with you on that. Like the other thing about attaching all-star to William Nylander's name, and I would think that, and I guess he has to finish off the entire 82-game regular season, but this idea after every playoff failure that he's the one guy, he's the one member of the core four that is the trade asset that must be cast off at the end of the season to just mix it up. He's the guy with the highest value, so that's part of the discussion. He's the guy with the most tradable contract. No, he's a guy that you'd be looking to extend and has exceeded the value of that contract that was signed at the very last moment before he was forced to miss an entire season as a restricted free agent. So, yeah, I would have thought that that's over already. I mean, adding All-Star to the end of his title, I guess, maybe for me would have solidified it a little bit, but everybody can see how valuable this guy has been all season long.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, he was so dynamic last night. Being there live for that one, which was a blast. Right.
Anybody bother you?
Not a single person. No. I told you nobody would know who I am. The person that I went with got recognized. Right. I did not. But yeah, like 4 points, and one of those goals was absolutely ridiculous. But like, he was the best player on the ice, and he was like, looked like a threat constantly when he was out there. It's exactly what you want from him. And you know, I think if there had been criticisms of him over time, it's that he didn't reach that level with the consistency you might want. And you know, he hadn't had even a point a game season yet. He had that one little blip this year where he had like, he 5 of his 6 games in early January, he was held scoreless. He has 9 points in 4 games since then. I don't think we can count a little 5-6 game blip as this guy's not consistent anymore. He's been Marner-esque in like how often he's on the score sheet game to game. He's been incredible, and it lets you, it gives you the flexibility to do things like yesterday when maybe things don't look like they're clicking everywhere. You juggle up the lines and see if Nylander can spark something else. We saw Matthews and Marner and Bunting back together at practice today too, because that Nylander Tavares Yankroc group clicked a little bit. And I know you've become a big Cali Yankroc
guy. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and we'll get into what the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to be targeting here at the trade deadline. And there's a certain defenseman for a certain last place team that is hot on everybody's lips when it comes to
my least favorite thing, trying to parse through a garbage team and figure out if a defenseman is good defensively in a fire wagon situation. Obviously, you can watch and you can look at earlier stuff, but apologies, I have not watched 47 Columbus Blue Jackets games.
Yeah, so season. Yeah, you're a Gavrikov takes come with a grain of salt, as do mine. But no, Kelly Yarncroc, I mean, you would think that it would be easy enough to get somebody to fit alongside a couple of high-level NHL players in the top six. But, man, yeah, finding that left winger, that winger along, whether it's Tavares and Nylander or at times Tavares and Marner, has not been an easy fix. And at times it's been Alex Kerfoot, which hasn't exactly taken off. But Kelly Yarncroc is taking the ball and running with it.
And yeah, he's on pace to clear his career high in scoring without much concern. And even if the shooting percentage comes down a little bit, he's a guy who's always been above average in terms of finishing. It's just been a matter of getting into the situation. So he's been huge. And one of the things that you were concerned about in the offseason for the Leafs was whether they could replicate Kasha and Mikheyev's ability to play in a couple different situations and play in different spots in the lineup. Whatever you think of those guys individually, it was helpful to have a couple guys with that level of versatility. And Yarncroc not only showing that versatility early, but then being like, no, you don't need to worry about the versatility because I got this spot on lockdown, has been great. And it's it's good to see. He doesn't take much off the table whatsoever.
No, it goes in 5-on-5 goals per 60. It is Austin Matthews and William Nylander tied for first. And then it's Kelly Yarncroc. That's how good he's been for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Also, weirdly, just like doesn't play heavy minutes. And I don't know if that's like, I don't know if that's a feature or a bug. Now, like lately, he's playing a few more minutes, but he's only averaging 13.5 on the season, and he only played like 11 minutes last night.
Well, that's what gets your goals per 60 up.
Yeah, is he gets his points and then gets off the ice. Nope, that's it. My per 60's in good shape here.
All right, that was today's top story. Raptors have another day off in the beautiful metropolis of Sacramento, California. I shouldn't knock it. I've never been there.
It's not my favorite city on the NBA map.
Right. It's supposed to, that's the whole thing about Sacramento, that it's the capital and you got the Capitol building, I suppose, but it's like boring.
I'm Canadian. I don't really care about state capitol buildings. Like, I'm not itching to go to Albany, New York.
Honestly, well, I was trying to think of one other thing about Sacramento. I mean, other than Lady Bird being set there.
The Beam. That's
it. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, now. But that's, I mean, this is the first year of the Beam.
Yeah.
And them lighting the Beam. And the Raptors are going to try and fend off the Beam for another day.
They're getting beamed.
Yeah, probably. That's tomorrow night on Sportsnet. But we have some Raptors, if not news, some speculation, some reports.
Tis the season.
Yeah, according to Bleacher Report's Chris Haynes, Toronto Raptors star guard Fred VanVleet has parted ways with his agents, Parlay Sports and Entertainment, ahead of free agency, according to league sources. There are also some rumors surrounding potential trade partners for the Raptors if, in fact, they go down that path. Of course, Fred has an opt-out, can become a free agent at the conclusion of this season. Mark Stein on his Substack said the Suns are assessing their post-Paul, Chris Paul, future, and thus identify Charlotte's Terry Rozier, New York's Emmanuel Quickly, and Toronto's Fred VanVleet as potential trade targets. VanVleet's future with Canada's team remains unclear given the 21-27 Raptors struggles and VanVleet's desire for a lucrative new contract in the offseason. And then Kevin O'Connor brought up the Clippers. You said league sources say the Clippers also interested in Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet. I mean, probably not at the same time, but one or the other. For VanVleet, the Clippers could offer something along the lines of Luke Kennard, Terrence Mann, Brandon Boston Jr., a future first-round pick, and a second-round pick or two. So maybe, okay, that was a lot. Maybe I should have stopped after the agent thing. Is that anything to you?
Yeah, of course it is. It's always something if a guy changes representation, especially heading into free agency. And that's an agent and an agency group that Fred has been with and been through a lot with. And it's interesting because backward looking, you couldn't be too upset. He's basically got every dollar that should have been available to him.
Because he bet on himself.
And yeah, if you named that agency in part to play off the bet on yourself thing, maybe a rebrand in the future.
Yeah, I thought they were just like, but they were like maybe in the same building as Frito-Lay, like maybe part of the same company, but
how
no.
How can that be profitable for Frito-Lay? it's always something. And I think, you know, again, it's not a backward looking thing because he's gotten the dollars when they've been available to him. I know that he wasn't particularly happy that the information about his contract discussions with the Raptors got out a couple weeks back. I don't know if that is at all related, but the timeline there, you know, one came before the other. The big thing is, like, if you know that you are going to explore a change in the offseason, it's better to do that now so you don't leave the agent high and dry, committing resources to your free agency look. And look, let's be honest, if the Raptors get moving on something that involves Fred VanVleet, teams don't tamper, of course. You would
never lose
a late second round pick.
That's right.
Yeah. so you would never. But the team acquiring Fred VanVleet would probably want to be able to at least have some conversations about what that next thing looks like. And maybe you don't want to have those conversations with an agency that you don't think you're going to be with come contract time.
Yeah. And that makes total sense. I would also add, having never been in the situation and likely to never be in the situation where I'm negotiating a large multi-million dollar contract in a cap sport, that if you're of Fred VanVleet's ilk, or I mean, certainly if you're negotiating max contracts, like, I don't know why Kevin Durant, any of those guys would ever need an agent, because it's just, here's the number that I can sign for. Well, what negotiating is it? Is there here? Like, here, sign me to that. I'll forego the 4% that my agent would get. Why would I hand him anything for an obvious contract? Then now, this isn't quite that. Like, if he had signed the extension with the Raptors, there is a maximum that he would have been allowed, but that's why he didn't sign it. So that's, like, I'm just giving you a little insight into where my thinking would be if I was a professional basketball player in a cap sport.
Well, look, so why he didn't sign it is in part because at the time that they were discussing it, there were three scenarios, and one of them, the only downside scenario, is pretty unlikely. The downside scenario is Fred has such a bad season that 4 years and $100 million and change isn't there for him this summer. Even in an injured year where he hasn't played his best basketball, that contract's going to be there for him in the offseason.
Yeah. And he's played better recently, and, too.
Yeah, he's been on fire. And if it's not there, guess what? You pick up the player option and then revisit it after a year anyway. Like, yeah, the downside is next to nothing there. The second scenario is he signs it and outplays it immediately and kicks himself for signing it.
Right.
And the third scenario is he plays out like this. Maybe he plays the rest of the season at the level he's been on the last couple weeks. And then he's back into discussions of, hey, that max you could have given me before was not enough, and this is why I continued to bet on myself, etc.
Yeah, he's really good, and he's refining his form. So let's talk about the two teams that were mentioned there in those reports. The Suns and the Clippers, who, yeah, both make sense with Fred VanVleet. Sure, if Chris Paul's 1,000 years old, which he is, and if the Los Angeles Clippers need a point guard, which they do, and if we know that Kawhi Leonard can play with Fred VanVleet, which we also know, those make a lot of sense. Kevin O'Connor did lay out a specific trade, so maybe we'll get to that in a second. The Suns one is a harder one to figure. So Jay Crowder is, what, $10, $11 million of salary that can be moved easily because he's not even playing for the Suns right now. He's at home just chilling, playing video games.
You're going to find a third team to route Jay Crowder to because he has contending teams that would like him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do the Suns have that the Raptors want? Because
You're not getting Bridges. You could have a modicum of interest in Dario Saric, even though he's another power forward. He's a pending free agent, so maybe you could re-sign him to a reasonable deal, but he has another mid-tier salary that maybe helps make that math work. And then Landry Shamet is interesting because he's affordable for the next couple of years, hits a lot of threes, is a little smaller than Gary Trent Jr., but does the same kind of like pesty gamble stuff. He's not as good as Gary Trent Jr., but if you're looking at, you know, hey, a bench scoring role, it's not the worst thing. The big thing is that you would ask for a whole bunch of picks back from the Suns. Now,
and the Suns have all their picks.
They do. The other scenario is that DeAndre Ayton is involved, and that's a tougher
one
because
the Suns making that deal? Like, this is a team that I know they've been in and out of the playoffs this season, but this is a team that has championship aspirations.
Yeah. And if you're the Raptors, you're looking at DeAndre Ayton and being like, well, I guess overpaying him pretty significantly for the next 3 years is better than losing Fred VanVleet for nothing in the offseason, but it's not your ideal situation. So it's got to be a picks heavy deal, or you find something like a third team that is willing to take Crowder and they kick some assets back. Like, I don't know, maybe the Warriors throw Wiseman in the deal if you have any interest at all in trying to turn him into something this late in the game. The Clippers one's just as hard too because they don't have any picks.
No, that is not a...
I believe the earliest pick they could trade right now is their 2028 first round pick.
Okay, that's a long time from now.
Yes, they have some seconds in the mix there as well. I really like Mann. I think Amir Coffey's kind of good too, but that is like... Masai has all the job security in the world. Generally, the picks that are way, way, way in the future, it's hard to put much of a value on them. Like, it becomes a trade chip that you then turn around and can move elsewhere. But do you really think Masai and Bobby Webster and them are looking, you know, Pascal Siakam's 29 years old.
Yeah.
You looking at a pick 6 years down the road, 5 years down the road? I don't think it has a ton of value to you. So the Clippers one seems a little less realistic, even though they do have some of those mid-sized, like Covington, Kennard, like that you can make the math work. By piling together a bunch of meh.
So in the early days of Fred VanVleet trade speculation, it's hard to get too juiced up for a potential Fred VanVleet trade if you're a Raptors fan.
But here's the thing with the NBA, and it's like I'll do, heading into the trade deadline, I'll do my annual all your trade ideas are bad column, and I'll give some ideas of my own. But the hardest part of pegging down NBA trades is that the way things end up working a lot of the time is Blake and Ben sit here and we come up with a framework of Ben wants this, Blake wants this, and there's this gap. There are 28 other people in this office that we can go and be like, hey, here's a framework we've got. Here's an asset that doesn't quite fit. Do you want Jay Crowder? Do you want, you know, I saw people kicking around a Gary Trent, Jakob Poeltl thing. I don't think the Spurs would have a ton of interest in Gary Trent, just given where they are and that most of their prospects are on the guard side of things. Maybe there's a third team that would really like Gary Trent because they're in it now and would like the bird rights to re-sign him in the summer. So then there's a, then that's a potential thing as well. Like a lot of these bigger trades or trade deadline stuff, not universally, but you'll see a lot of the time a third team looped in a way that you would never have thrown it in the trade machine because it seems small, but you know, sometimes a team wants a flyer on a guy that would otherwise have to get waived or bought out, or another team has a 4 second-round picks this year and can't use them all. So they're willing to kick one in to pick up someone else. So this is where it gets hard, is like, yeah, nothing one for one makes a ton of sense on paper for Fred VanVleet, because generally speaking, the good teams don't have great pick assets. Where it gets super interesting, and this is, Will Liu and I did this a little bit on the Raptor show. I think I'm going to write about it next week. There are a couple contending teams that are very young and have lots of extra picks. Those ones get really interesting if they're interested in a Fred VanVleet or Gary Trent or even higher up the chain. New Orleans and Memphis have boatloads of picks and young players.
Picks are good, but again, like, this is a team that...
But they have nearer term. We're not talking 2028 picks. We're talking like nearer term, not super well protected picks.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll pick up this conversation.
You trying to get that post LeBron unprotected Lakers
pick? Yeah, that's nice, but yeah. That's probably not helping you next season, which I imagine the Raptors are trying to pivot towards,
for
right?
For sure, but it becomes one of the best trade chips in the entire trade market.
Yeah, all right, well. So maybe we'll pick up this conversation a little bit later on. When we come back, we're going to talk about the potential trade targets for the Toronto Maple Leaf, Toronto Maple Leafs, including the aforementioned Vladislav Gavrikov.
Doesn't this time of year make you wish that cities that have multiple teams could do like cross sport trades? Like, the Raptors aren't in it this year. The Leafs are. So like Toronto, like the Raptors could trade someone to the Knicks and the Rangers send back someone to the Leafs. That's a poor example because the Rangers aren't folding up, but you know, something like that.
I wish, if only we lived in your fantasy world. Yeah. Like
I do.
Yeah, all right, we'll talk to Frank Saravelli next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. I'm out of my job, so we don't have a ton of time with Frank Saravalli. So let's get right to it. How's it going, Frank? Director of hockey content for DailyFaceoff.com. How's it going?
I am good. What are you guys up to?
You know, just parsing over these Vladislav Gavrikov numbers for the last place Columbus Blue Jackets, who got a point in Johnny Hockey's return to Calgary yesterday, losing in overtime to the Flames. Yeah. And he was like, I guess nice that they cheered him during the video thing and then booed him afterwards. Anyways, we're talking about Gavrikov, the name everybody's got rattling around in their brains. I mean, Elliot Friedman brought him up over the weekend. You've written about him on dailyfaceoff.com. I wouldn't say this is, if this is the move, or like maybe 1A to the other move, this doesn't feel all that sexy if this is it, Frank.
Well, it doesn't feel sexy, and here's the complicating factor that I outlined in the story that I published yesterday on Daily Faceoff, is the ask is high. And I when you look back on the two most recent transactions for a similar stylistic player to Gavrikov, it's David Savard, which is what the ask centers around because he's coming from Columbus. He's a little bit younger and also cheaper on the salary cap. So they think that the asking price starts with Savard. That was a first, a third, and a fourth. That's a lot. Yeah. And then you look at the next guy that went last year in Ben Chiarot going from Montreal to Florida, which is a deal that surely the Florida Panthers rue, giving up their unprotected first-round pick in this year's draft, which is not only seemingly a historically strong draft, but also one in which the Florida Panthers have gone from a 122-point team to an 80-point team. So that's problematic. But the common thread between both of those is that Savard played 14 minutes a night in Tampa's Stanley Cup run, and Chiarot played 17 minutes a night as Florida was extinguished in the second round with a sweep. So, given the prices paid, I asked the question in the story, why is Vladislav Gavrikov, who's not physical, he does munch minutes, he does block shots, he is a simple defender, why does he cost so much more than what the Oilers, for instance, paid for Brett Kulak last year?
Yeah, I'm with you, Frank. I don't really understand that either, and I get it that we're a month plus from the trade deadline, so you put the price tag high right now and see if anyone meets it, and then maybe it comes down later. I'm curious to hear, Frank, how you, like in talking to other teams, how they value Gavrikov or a guy like Gavrikov, where you mentioned he's not especially physical. He's mostly an minutes eater.
He's that too.
Yeah. Yeah. He could throw out of the bullpen, whatever. But like I look at him, and obviously I haven't watched every Columbus game the last 4 years. I look at some of the more advanced stuff, and it's hard to parse out how much impact he could have on a good team because he plays for a really bad team, and sure, the numbers don't love him, but that's because he starts like all of his shifts in the defensive zone on a really bad team. So I'm curious whether it's Gavrikov or just defensive defensemen on bad teams, how do teams go about trying to figure out how a guy like that might fit in a more win now situation?
Well, that's actually, I think, the story of this deadline, because it's not just Gavrikov that's coming from a bad team. Depending on who you're looking at, it's likely also Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves. And the big question you're asking yourself with those guys is, how much of what we've seen from them this season and last is a byproduct of just not having the proper support? Like, is what we've seen from Jonathan Taves because he's playing with Filip Kurashev and Taylor Radish? Or is it because he's a little bit older now, 8 years removed from being Selke guy Jonathan Taves, and is really kind of just a guy now with, you know, a fiery instinct? Or is what you're going to get from him a rejuvenated guy that has a shot in the arm with a chance to win and compete again? I don't know the answer to that, but I would say with Gavrikov, there's two things that stand out for me. One, I did some archetype rankings earlier this season in which I tried to pick different archetypes and slot players in ranking-wise around the league. And Gavrikov came in at number 19 on our top 20 shutdown defensemen. And what was unique about that was that with Gavrikov, he was one of only two players that made the top 20 where, when isolated, his goals against that he's on the ice for is up relative to teammates. So it was kind of an ugly stat. And so I think the true answer is that impact on a Stanley Cup winning team, ideally he's a third pair guy. But on a team that's thin on the blue line, he probably slots in on the second pair.
Yeah, and I know going into the season, and especially with the injury to Jake Muzzin, you would have said that the Leafs are thin on the blue line, but they've made it work, man. They really have. I do wonder, though, if this is an indication of the type of player they're going to be looking for at the deadline. And I would imagine it's more than this, if it is something of this ilk, but is this an indication? Is there like almost vindication, perhaps, for Frank Saravalli that the Toronto Maple Leafs are, in fact, looking for defensemen?
I don't view it that way at all, because I understand what the numbers have said, and I understand all the people smashing their heads against the wall saying, "You idiot, look at how few chances they're allowing. They don't need defense." It's kind of been clear and obvious to me in the sense that if you look at this team on paper, their most obvious need is not up front. It's on the back end, where I still think they're thin and also thin on experience. You know, it's nice to have Sandin and Liljegren pick up the slack, and it's great to see Mark Giordano pick up the role that he has and do a lot of heavy lifting for this team. It's been ultra impressive. But those aren't the guys that I'm going to be betting on when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's a whole different beast. And I've seen time and time again, and you guys have too, the Leafs get to the playoffs and be absolutely overwhelmed on the forecheck. And they can't manage it. They can't handle it. And they can't get the puck to their stars to make the plays at the other end of the ice. And so all of that brings us to a guy that's rocketing up my trade targets list, and a team that I believe the Toronto Maple Leafs have expressed interest in Jake McCabe. And he seems to have a really nice blend of acquisition cost while also having term on his contract. And we know that the Leafs' preference at the end of the day, if they can do it, is to get a defenseman with term, someone that I think is a nice fit in terms of similar stylistic fit as Gavrikov, but doesn't have the overinflated price tag. And when you look at Chicago and their cap space that they can wield, I believe they're willing to retain half on McCabe. So that would give you two more years of Jake McCabe after this one at $2 million. It's almost, in a lot of ways, it de-risks you from whatever it is about McCabe that you might not like.
Yeah, and if they're doing that, I mean, maybe you don't have to send salary the other way. What I'm curious about, and man, I'm too dumb to figure it out on my own. Like, I just go to Cap Friendly, and I see that even with the Jake Muzzin stuff on the LTIR, that the Leafs only have $1 million worth of cap space come deadline. How much do you expect them to actually be working with here, even if, you know, you're retaining half of even a Bo Horvat or half of a Patrick Kane? Is that, like, how much salary?
They can get lean.
Yeah.
I mean, they can, they're carrying the max on their roster right now at 23. So they could certainly get lean and send a few guys down to create the space, additional space that they'd want to. Is it perfect? No, but this year it's doable. Third party brokers, the Leafs have used them in the past and paid more in order to make it happen. But I just think that further highlights a guy like McCabe, in the sense that you don't really need to move a lot. And in addition to that, a thing that I should have pointed out is, let's say you are using $2 million on someone like McCabe. Well, then therefore, theoretically, provided that you're able to get lean, as I mentioned, and be creative with the cap, then you could also maybe potentially tackle, you know, one of your other objectives up front with a forward. You know, I don't know that you can squeeze in a second line left winger with whatever you're targeting cap wise after that, but I don't think anything's impossible.
In terms of that, you know, second line winger or whatever that may be, have you heard anything about the Leafs' willingness to potentially send out a player who could be useful now? I think of a Kerfoot who's down on the fourth line and has kind of been jumped by a few guys who have outplayed him the last little bit. And then, of course, he has, you know, the $3.5 million hit ahead of UFA, but maybe a team wants to take a look at him. Is that a possibility, or do you expect the Leafs to be in pure ad situation?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I think you always want to guard against having something pop up between the deadline and then the playoffs themselves where you're like kicking yourself and I wish we didn't trade this guy because he's the exact guy we need as an insurance piece. But in this case, I'd imagine that based on what you're sort of getting from Kerfoot now and I don't want to call them his limitations, but his ceiling, that you could probably get something that is comparable for a lot less of a comp hit, cap hit that you could plug into that spot if absolutely necessary.
Frank, great stuff as always. We always check out your work on dailyfaceoff.com as well. Thanks for this, man.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
You too. There's Frank Cervelli, director of hockey content for dailyfaceoff.com. So the Leafs need multiple things. Like, I don't discount the fact that they probably need to add defensemen because you need a lot of them and they get hurt. And yeah, depth is good.
TJ Brody back at practice though in like a non-contact jersey. But I think the reports were he did a full practice today.
Yeah. You'd like to see him before the All-Star break, which is not out of the realm of possibility at all. And the Leafs blue line has overperformed. This team needs secondary scoring. Mm-hmm. Like at this moment, because Kalle Yarncroke has kind of entrenched himself in the top six, you're looking at, like Pierre Engvall, Alex Kerfoot as your next guys, if you go by the season stats, who are the highest goal scorers on this team outside of the top six guys. That's not a place I necessarily want to be at.
And I don't think it's surprising that guys like Anderson and McMahon are getting opportunities and to see if they can click on a third line that in a scenario that has Kerfoot playing on the fourth line. I think they're churning those guys with the intent of seeing if one of them can click and seeing, you know, is a Kerfoot expendable or, you know, can you focus on defense because one of these guys clicks. There's also eventually the Matthew Nyes thing. And I caught some of one of his games of the weekend and guys, he's a monster.
At that level, at least.
Yes, exactly. And I know that you and I have kicked around Nyes versus Topi Niemelä in terms of like prospect value or whatever, but one of those guys could be on the roster later this year. Anyway, I don't think you can bank on a ton of that, especially because if they go the distance, he could only get three NHL games in before the playoffs. But I do think there's a reason that, you know, guys like McMahon and Holmberg and Anderson are getting the churn and getting more opportunities.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I'm making a straw man here. And I understand Kyle Dubas is at the conclusion of his contract as general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think this team is in such a state and not unlike last year's team that racked up 115 points during the regular season. This is as good a chance as ever that you're going to have to go deep into the postseason. Winning a round would be nice. Even though you got Tampa in the first round, that it would look like, not unlike Alex Anthopoulos' 2015 season, if Kyle Dubas went out and got desperate, it would look like a guy who's in the final year of his deal, but I don't think anyone would fault him. Like, this is a team that you need to leverage every future asset for a win now.
It's not just that Kyle Dubas is in that situation. It's the entire core or the franchise, however you want it. Like, the Leafs aren't going anywhere, but like, if they flame out in the first round and you have to bring in a new GM who has to make a lot of very difficult decisions, like, it's more than just Dubas who's on the line here and is in a little bit of a lame duck status. This whole thing could have an eject button if the first round plays out the same way.
Speaking of trades, we may see an Aaron Rodgers trade this offseason. We'll talk to Peter King next of NBC Sports and Football Morning in America as the Fan. Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.